transmitters, and he and I actually set up shop right in front of Berkeley's Pacifica KPFA station when they were engaging 5 years ago in the same thing they're doing now, but now they're doing it more intensely, the harassment of independent protesters, the firing of independent broadcasters, the homogenization and corporatization of the of a previously independent radio station, and we were broadcasting on the streets urging the broadcasters to come on out and join us and trying to kind of doing a Radio Free Berkeley number before there was any station. And Free Radio Berkeley celebrated its 5th anniversary, even though it was sort of off the air. I mean, it has been off the air, on and off. There was Tree Radio Berkeley earlier this year, but after a court decision, Free Radio Berkeley left the air in order to avoid massive fines and legal entanglements. But I think they're coming back on. I know Liberation, San Francisco Liberation Radio, the second flagship radio station, has returned to the air for the last couple months. So we're going to hear a long interview. Maybe not too long, depending on how it seems to go, with Free Radio Berkeley broadcaster Sue Supriano. We're going to begin with that so I can sort of organize my thoughts. We encourage your call-ins, and we are so dedicated to call-ins that we actually stop programs to respond to them if you want to be on the air. The call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-FREE-RADIO-SANTA-CRUZ, FRSC, fittingly enough. So stay tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and let us stay tuned to you. Call in if you think something that we're saying deserves your comment.
The main city, and it's up very high. It's probably about 10,000 feet, I think.
Now, you went to which town to do what?
Well, I went to Quito.
Well, we're a little screwed up in the studio this morning, so do bear with us. That actually is the woman we're going to be talking to, Sue Supriano. She's actually going to be reporting not only on the 5th anniversary of Free Radio Santa Cruz, but on her work in South America and what she saw down there in that region regarding poor people and free radio and so forth. But in order to get all this straightened out, I'm going to actually zip into a Mumia tape. That is to say, not a tape actually of Mumia, but of our local walkout. Students and supporters merged at the town clock on Friday prior to the large demonstration yesterday in San Francisco. Locally in Santa Cruz, we had our own support from Mumia Abu-Jamal, the political prisoner in Philadelphia, who again is scheduled for execution. Again, I'm not quite sure what the schedule is, but he's been on death row for, 18 years, something like that. It's been a long time. And folks in Santa Cruz see him not only as a case of injustice that is brutally apparent, but also as a symbol of many, many other people in jail facing the kind of institutionalized injustice that poor people of color, many of them face in jail. Let's go to the town clock and hear a little bit about that. Approaching. As you can hear, the crowd is going wild. What little of a crowd there is here. We have about, 30 people at the clock as Food Not Bombs serves. Here's the IWW contingent with its red flag proudly waving. And here comes the lead person, first person at the clock. Where's my hug? And it's the vicious Jim Costner arriving. Hey, Jim, how are you? Good to see you.
Good to see you. I know you're going to speak about the safety net at some point, right?
Of course. Of course. And it looks like about... All right. Good work. Keep up the good work.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about the rally. The march. What's been happening?
Well, we met up with the high school students, about 100 of them. Proud-ass motherfuckers swapped the hell out of school, knowing there was repercussions, knowing they're enslaved. They came up and met us. A bunch of UCS students and other members of the community, about a few hundred of us marched down all around UCS. He came down Bay, took Mission Street, down Walnut, hung out in front of the high school for a while, came downtown. We went to jail because we see the connection between the prisoners, all kinds, and political prisoners, and tearing down the walls for freedom. We went and paid them a visit, some respect there, and at that point we decided it was appropriate to turn the flag because the upside-down flag is a sign of distress, and we have some distress going on here.
So which flag was, in fact, turned upside down?
The American flag was...
Our American flag.
Even though I don't like to call it my American flag, but the American flag was turned upside down because there's distress, and there's major stress, de-stress, horrendous oppression in the society, and it's a warning signal.
Now, what is the march all about? What are you here for today?
We're here because this is an international student solidarity day to free Mumia Abu-Jamal, free all political prisoners, but in particular Mumia Abu-Jamal. This tomorrow is his birthday, and millions, millions around the world are going to be meeting and rallying to support this brother, this oppressed brother, this set-up brother, this repressed brother, this amazing writer, this articulate man. He speaks about all people, women, gay people, homeless people. He speaks about capitalism. He speaks about every system that needs to die and every system that needs to rise up in this world in order to make this world the place it needs to be. And his birthday is tomorrow. Millions are going to meet in San Francisco, and today, the day before, students are coming out all around the world to say we too support them and we too will shut this shit down.
And you're a student?
I am a student.
What is your name?
My name is Andrea.
And Andrea, when did you first hear about Mumia's case?
I heard about Mumia when I lived in Los Angeles and I was in high school, and I saw a big poster. Long live posters on the urban areas!
Go.
And I saw a poster and it said, we arrest our fear, we murder our fear, we prosecute our fear, we execute our fear, free Mumia. And I said, who is this man? Who are they talking about? And I went to a bookstore where I knew I could find out, and I got the poster, and that was when I was about 16 years old, and I started reading about this case, and I knew something was terribly wrong, that no answers. When people can't give you the straight answer, when there's too many stories, there's something terribly wrong.
And how old are you now?
I am 21 now.
So you've been doing this for 5 years?
I've been working with the Santa Cruz Coalition for just this year, but I've been aware and involved in going to marches and rallies for about 4 years.
And Mumia Abu-Jamal has been in jail for how long?
He's been in jail for 18 years. He was arrested in 1981. He was a victim of police brutality, shot in the chest, shot, and almost killed in the hospital. Doctors and police stepped on his IV bags, shoving his urine up into his kidneys, his own urine. Finally, he survived that, and in 1982, he was put on death row, and he's been there ever since. He's been on death row for 18 years. His final state appeal was denied on October 28th, 1998, and now his case is going to the Third Court Circuit of Appeals, where the wife of the ex-mayor of Philadelphia resides on that injustice court, and we're hoping that she will do what she needs to do as a, quote, justice of this United States of America and take herself off the case, because obviously she's very, very biased. We're waiting for that right now.
Thank you, Andrea. Anything you want to add?
All power to the people. Power to the people, because the power of the people don't stop.
Thank you.
I wanted to tell you something.
Is Bernard Klitzner, who in his other identity is an accountant, but today and in other times he's a strong activist. Bernard, you've been doing a lot of work to help end the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban.
Yes, I have.
And I see you have a law against sleep is an unjust law button. What are you here for today?
I'm here, to walk for Mumia, because he represents freedom, for all of us. I think, that he fights every struggle there is, for working class, poor people and the oppressed. And I march, for him, as an eloquent voice, to soothe, and to bring the masses together. That's why I'm here today.
Thank you, Bernard, and keep us advised. What brings you to this neck of the woods?
His freedom is our freedom.
I second that.
How long have you known about the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal?
About a year.
About a year.
And were you in school today when this came up, or what happened?
Yeah, I went to a teach-in in September, I think it was, but on campus, and I just started getting involved in it.
Is this your first large protest, or have you been at large protests before?
My first.
I went to one. My first one was the war in Iraq, and I went to this one and the one earlier in the year.
And did you march down from the campus?
Yeah.
Anything interesting happened with the police department or passersby?
Yeah, we were on the route. When we went to the prison, police were all over the place taking pictures, and they said they had their hands on their guns and stuff. It's pretty ridiculous.
What's your name?
Q.
And your name is?
Meg.
Anything you want to add for our Free Radio Santa Cruz audience?
Primo mia.
Free all political prisoners.
Thank you both. We have with us that sometime police officer about them all, so to speak, that sleeping band opponent, Grant Wilson. Grant?
That's right. Well, that's my pseudonym, it's Grant Wilson. Actually.
What is your real name, sir?
Mr. Butch Baker. Was.
You are, in fact, you are Butch Baker. How you've changed since I last saw you. Well, I guess the job can do that to you. So, you marched down from campus today. What was that all about?
It's regarding Mumia Abu-Jamal and the support for his freedom and justice.
And are you pleased, disappointed at the numbers?
Pleased. Very energetic. I mean, people have been going. It's now 5 o'clock, and people have been drumming and marching nonstop since noon today.
And how many people did you march down with?
I think it varied. I think there was probably about 75 out to 100 people. Yes.
And was there a larger crowd earlier? Was it smaller? Was it pretty much the same?
I wasn't there at the very beginning, but on the march from the university into town, there was probably about 75 to 100 people for most of that.
And who is this individual with you? Is she also an undercover officer?
You'll have to ask her. I don't know.
What is your name, madam?
My name is Beatrice May Bloom.
And Beatrice, how do you have to be hanging
She's
out?
She's undercovered.
She's certainly covered at this moment, yes. What's the story here? Has this march been taken over by arrogant patriarchs who are demanding hugs?
Not that I know of. I've heard some rumors, but I don't think they've been substantiated.
Well, there you have it. All those vicious slanders, at last, have been swept away. Thank you.
Thank you.
And, we have a poet among us with a no-smoking racket, or a sign that says no smoking on a tennis racket, covered over with black masking tape. And this, of course, is the infamous Little Star.
Yeah, Brother Little Star, Takar Sevadar. You see, we are executing children by allowing them to be violated and tortured by tobacco smokers every day. So first we have to stop the violence within ourselves and the violence that's occurring all around us in the form of tobacco smoke, the worst, most atrocious act of violence in the universe.
Well, I know we have no smokers, at least within visual range, although probably over in the rush in there may be a closet smoker or two.
There's tobacco smokers that rule the world I can't find anywhere. And I want to die instead of Mumia. I want them to execute me and let Mumia go free because I want to get away from these evil smokers who rule the world.
Rising up, demanding change from a Europe split at Yalta. It was summer talk at Malta. Slav and Magyar, Czech and German, step into the age of a new wind blowing, blowing east to west, blowing into Warsaw, Prague and Budapest. A fresh breeze blowing from Moscow to Berlin. Open up the wall and let it in. The streets are filled with voices as East Berlin rejoices. West Berliners welcome in their neighbors from the east. Dancing across the border, changing the old order. The wall that held the people could not hold back their ideas of a new wind blowing, blowing east to west, blowing into Warsaw, Prague and Bucharest. A fresh breeze blowing from Moscow to Berlin. Open up the wall and let it in. There's a new wind blowing, blowing east to west, blowing into Warsaw, Prague and Budapest. A fresh breeze blowing from Moscow to Berlin. Open up the wall. Let it in. Mach die Mauer auf und lass es rein. Open up the wall and let it in. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing.
So do you want to hear about the true story of my legal troubles, or is that for a different
time? No, let's hear about the true story. First of all, sign in, please.
Oh, my name is John Kotler, Jonathan Kotler, and I was recently arrested for under a gram of pot, 0.62 sales.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're about now to hear the interview with Sue Supriano of Free Radio Berkeley and what's been happening up there while Free Radio Santa Cruz has been struggling and struggling successfully to carry on in spite of FCC raids, phone record subpoenas, and so forth. None of this has happened in the last few months, but a year ago we had a raid on the station in the sense that it was several FCC inspectors who wanted to come on the property and were fended off by a courageous 12-year-old at that time, and we talked about that then. Now, however, let's go up to Berkeley, or actually, she came down here. We're listening now to Sue Supriano, broadcaster from Free Radio Berkeley, talking about the situation in Berkeley.
In the United States, you've been kind of based in Berkeley for quite a while, and you've been sort of one of the key people, well, certainly a strong supporter of Free Radio Berkeley. Free Radio Berkeley has been off the air for a year, more or less, with the exception of Tree Radio Berkeley and the occasional broadcast since the decision that you couldn't get a license. This was Claudia Wilkins' sort of flip-flop decision back in June, I guess it was, or May, June. What's developed from that? We in Santa Cruz are now pleased that we are the longest ever continuous station in the country, but you are the oldest. We want to know when Gramps is going to get back on the air.
Gramps, Stephen Denifer.
Well, Gramps meaning Gramps, your station.
Gramps is our station. Mm. Well, when I was left now it's like a little over 2 months ago, a station was supposed to start immediately. The programmers were all lined up. Everything was ready to go, except it turned out that with the place that some people thought we had, we didn't have. So I'm told everything is on hold. On the other hand, today is the 6th anniversary of Free Radio Berkeley, and we're going to be broadcasting from the long hall tonight from either 7 or 8 until midnight. And somebody told me, this is only hearsay, that this has been going on every Sunday night for a while. So I know there's, you know, a core group of people that are more than happy to do the radio anytime of that. But it's this usual issue of organization, who's going to do the work and where can you find the place and the money to pay for it. So I can't, that's the best I could answer.
Well, I want to congratulate you on the 6th year anniversary. And also, I understand the Berkeley City Council has come up with another kind of recommendation, plotted approval statement for Free Radio Berkeley. I know they supported they overturned a challenge to Free Radio Berkeley last summer, or they ignored the challenge. There was some sort of vote by the Berkeley City Council unanimously praising Free Radio. And then I guess some of the locals didn't like the antenna as high as it was in the
some of the locals being about two people, right.
Right. Well, a militant minority.
Right, that's all it takes to make a fuss. Yeah, and right, so we've definitely had a lot of support from the city council and from the city in general. I know sometimes I think hardly anybody listens to it, but people really support it. And I don't know that for a fact, but that's kind of my guess, is I'd like to know there were more listeners. But people support it in principle because they know that that the media is just controlled by these corporations, and we don't really have much, the people don't have access to either information or getting their own voices out, and we don't have community controlled media.
Speaking of media control, I see you have in your hands the Anderson Valley Advertiser of April 7th, which actually mentions you in a story about KPFA. And I know that as I was telling you earlier, that I was one of the folks who was, Stephen Dunifer and I did some sort of guerrilla broadcasting right in front of on the sidewalk outside KPFA back in 1993, and urging the employees to come on out on the street and talk about the issues. Apparently KPFA was not allowing, as it currently does not allow, internal dialogue about its policies, which affect the community, though they claim it's some sort of internal matter. Can you tell us more about what's going on with that once fine radio station?
Yeah, well, I probably saw you at that time, Robert, because I was there, too. But we didn't really know each other. But, yeah, I was for a long time trying to get things to change at KPFA, and I think it's been a very long process. And right now, finally, I'll say... Bless you. The staff have taken a stand when Nicole Sawaya, the station manager of KPFA, who everybody really liked a lot apparently, and she really unified people and was a nice person and did a good job, she got suddenly fired. I think they gave her 2 hours or an hour and a half or something to get out. They say she wasn't fired. The end of her probationary period came to a close, whatever you call it. It was another example of the fact that the Pacifica board, the Pacifica staff, has all the power. So it's switched around.
Now, the Pacifica staff, of course, is the national board, which there are 5 listener-sponsored radio stations, one the earliest of which, I guess, was it WBAI? Or KPFA in Berkeley in 1949 began.
Yeah, in fact, the 50th anniversary of KPFA is Thursday, and there's going to be a demonstration at noon on Thursday in front of the station at Martin Luther King and Berkeley Way in Berkeley, if you happen to be around. It's very ironic that 50 years after it started, that it's come to this. And actually, I think we could reflect on that it's so often this happens with institutions. It kind of flipped around from being a power up from the bottom to being power down from the top. It's like it just flipped around, but it's been a process. And this issue of keeping things democratic is just an ongoing
struggle. I know that KPFA was responsible or was involved in fighting the blacklist in the 50s and the loyalty oaths in the 50s, and in the 60s it was there when the House Un-American Activities Committee hosed everybody down the steps at the its bogus hearings, Operation Abolition hearings in San Francisco. KPFA was on the scene during the free speech movement at the University of California in Berkeley in 1964, and then in 1969 I imagine KPFA was there when People's Park protests were going on on. And I don't know much about it in the 70s and 80s, except it seemed to get whiter, more vanilla, and more pasty as it went along, and less community-based, less cutting-edge, less radical, if you will.
Right. And I still listen to KPFA a lot, I have to say, and there's a lot of good programs, but it's definitely, and I learn a lot. And they do good things, but it's definitely there. You don't see them out on the street. You don't see them even at events, just the way it was even when I was working there, you know, in the 80s. So things have definitely changed a lot. And inside the station, I went there in 1980, I started. And it's always been...
You're a former employee?
Oh, I was a programmer for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And something like that, until they threw me off along with a bunch of other people. And I tried to organize volunteers, unpaid staff, from the very beginning. Well, not from the very beginning, after I was there a few years, because I could see that people were treated in a very, oftentimes, in a really pretty awful way. In the internal politics of KPFA were not what I was wanting. And it's I could talk about it for hours, but basically, starting with David Solnicker. David Solnicker was the station manager when I first started working at KPFA.
When was that?
That was about 1980. And I remember once we went through a long process. Mama O'Shea, who a lot of people know, Mama O'Shea, who's passed away, but she and I and some other people really worked hard to get unpaid staff organized, and we were doing really well, and we were in paid staff who didn't come to the meetings. And then David Solnicker said he'd pay for a mediator. I'm telling this story because it's a perfect example of what to look out for. And he seemed like he was, you know, really going to help, really wanted a good outcome here. And guess what? He took that mediator literally into his office, locked the door, because I tried to get in at that time. This is so long ago, I have only a dim memory. But I'll never forget this, because it's what you, the things that were going on inside of KPFA are the very things that they criticize about the corporate world. Only in some ways it was even worse. Anyway, that mediator went away. He gave a couple people on the committee what they were asking for, what was making them mad. Somebody wanted to use the remote broadcasting stuff, so they got to do that, and that was the end of that person. That was just the end of the movement. That was it. Boing, finished. And I saw that same thing, and I was involved in it several times. We went through these cycles, and I haven't been inside the station since... I don't know, 6 years, really too much, but...
Let me get closer to home and talk about Free Radio Berkeley. There have been internal conflicts in Free Radio Berkeley that we don't hear much about, and some people like to kind of keep this under covers and say, well, we don't want to air our dirty laundry in public. But if you were to talk about the problems that Free Radio Berkeley has had internally as a sort of an object lesson for Free Radio Santa Cruz, what would you say?
Well, I would say that it's really, really, I think it's really important that the organizations that we have be democratic. Free Radio Berkeley has been kind of anarchistic, and when I came, started getting active,
What's the difference between democratic and anarchistic in your usage?
Well, let me say that there's just a lot of problems with people. The issue of personal personalities and problems and how people get along and how things are structured is very important issues. And the whole business about you can take a lot of time processing things, and then people spend a lot of time getting upset because you're taking too much time processing things. But if you don't process things, they just fester and get worse. So it's a very big challenge. And it's to get the process and the personalities and to get people communicating and relating. And I know you're pushed for time here. Perfect example. Here we are right now. But there's a lot of expertise around these days about people from people who know how to do mediation, who will teach it. There's a lot known about dynamics of meetings and interpersonal dynamics and communication skills, and I think it's very important that we draw on this expertise, because if we keep replicating exactly what we're trying to change, It's not going to work. I mean, it doesn't work.
Well, I know that the problem with corporate media has been, kind of small groups of people coalescing power at the top and cutting out the bottom and applying the lowest common denominator to dumb down programming in order to get more funding from large corporate sources, which it seems what KPFA is trying to do along with other, national public radio and all that stuff. But the problems we've had at Free Radio Santa Cruz have been more... kind of grassroots technical problems. I mean, we don't have a place to be. I guess Free Radio Berkeley has the same problem. Can't find a place to be. I mean, there also have been conflicts inside the station. There was a hate speech conflict. Some people talked about a libertarian attitude, let people say what they want. Other people were very concerned about homophobic or white supremacist statements on the air. And I know that there was a series of conflicts that I was personally privy to because I know some of the activists involved, John Vance, Carol Denny, all having conflicts themselves within the studio. But that really wasn't the main problem that you had at Free Radio Berkeley. It was government repression and failure of resources, right?
I don't know. Well, I have to say about myself, as a former psychotherapist and a person very interested in consciousness and communication and between people and all that kind of thing, my own analysis is that a lot of it is personal, interactive stuff. I find that there's not so much political. I think... a lot of it isn't really about political differences. Of course, to have a resource is always is nice, but I don't think that's... when that's the problem, that's a problem. That's very clear-cut. But in addition to that, there's a lot of interpersonal stuff that goes on that's really sad.
But you've been off the air since June, and that's not because of interpersonal conflicts.
Well, I don't know about that. I wouldn't say I wouldn't say it is the reason. I don't think there's a reason, but I think that a lot of people... I was very active in Free Radio Berkeley for a while, and some really nasty stuff happened to me. Somebody was circulating all kinds of accusations, a person that never even spoke to me. I mean, I'm just going to go into this for example, and was passing these papers around. I came with long lists of mediators and a proposal that I spent lots of time on, and people didn't even discuss it because the person who was in charge of running the meeting was down on it, so he just buzzed it through in 2 seconds. And I mean, all kinds of... this is really airing dirty laundry, all right.
Not necessarily, because I think that this similar processes can happen in other stations, and I know that I think Carol Denny had some similar concerns, that she felt she had a grievance with a member, and she brought mediation proposals to the station. Didn't work too well. Again, every situation is different.
Yeah, I mean, and you have... the thing is that that people don't follow through on this stuff. They don't even seem interested. And when I say people, I say enough people don't seem interested in pursuing this stuff. So what happens is that a lot of the people who are programmers never came to meetings because the meetings were too chaotic. They felt like they were wasting their time. So it wasn't... even a lot of times like people want to get power, it's just be those who do the work make the decisions because they're the only ones around, or else whoever's there makes the decisions. It's not necessarily a big plot, although you never know when there's FBI or who knows what in there making a difference too. We always say, well, it doesn't even matter because we can do it. We can ruin it ourselves.
You don't need the FBI.
Right, but who knows, maybe. Who knows? We don't know. So it's like a mixed thing. On the one hand, it's really wonderful that people come together, such a diverse group of people. It's wonderful that they come together, and we actually pulled off having a 24-hour-a-day radio station. That's pretty incredible. That's the good side. The bad side is that we had a hard time at meetings. We had a hard time figuring out how to do things. People bring all their emotional baggage, and especially when you get such a diverse group of people, it's a very big challenge. And as far as I can see, that on the left, the progressives, the social change, whatever you want to call us, we haven't got that part very well together. And like I was saying, there's a lot of expertise to draw on, and I think attention needs to go to it, even though it takes time. I find so many times people will spend an hour saying that they think it's a waste of time to take time to do something like mediation, or they're sure it doesn't work, or communication stuff is silly. When that same hour they could have been spending much more constructively communicating more constructively or learning how to communicate or having a mediator. People get very anxious and uptight, and I, you know, maybe it touches some fear in them, whatever it is. I think it's really important to deal with it.
Yeah, I was thinking for our free radio station, it'd be nice to have a subcommittee that people can go to. If one person feels he's being or she's being maligned by somebody on the station, or there's a problem, that they can, you know, they can do a mediation there. Of course, again, that involves getting the permission of both people involved, and, you know, that's, I guess in some cases you had, you know, deadlocks in your station where people didn't want to get into that. But, I mean, getting back to why isn't Free Radio Berkeley on the air, why aren't you on the air?
Well, I don't know. As I say, I've been out of the country for, and out of it, between getting ready to go out of the country and coming back, I'm totally out of the loop for the last 2 months.
Although expect a full report soon.
And we are having a broadcast tonight. Mm-hmm. Personally speaking, and this is very totally personal, but I would like to see a radio station in Oakland, or a bunch of radio stations in Oakland. And it's interesting, as a media person for Free Radio Berkeley, during after the injunction, you know, and the whole world is watching Free Radio Berkeley, and it's this, you know, bunch of ragtag people. It's just really amazing. So Free Radio Berkeley is really important as a symbol. Stephen Dunifer has been very important as the founder of this movement, sort of as developing these little transmitters. Now there's lots and lots and lots of people. It's not just Stephen Dunifer, but he certainly was brave to go to court and say, well, screw you to the FCC, and has done, and we have a movement now, and that's wonderful. In terms of Free Radio Berkeley itself, I don't know what kind of energy there is for that.
You know, I know that what sort of surprised me is in the East Bay and in the San Francisco area, in the whole Bay Area, have many free radio stations popped up? I haven't heard of many. I know there was San Francisco Liberation Radio, then there was, I guess,
There still is San Francisco Liberation
Radio. I guess
it's
back on the air again.
Back on the air, yeah. And Richard Edmondson and Joe, I can't think of her last name, and people involved with San Francisco Liberation Radio have been very,
very few stations other than those two. I mean,
there was Radio Eques, and they got pushed off the air. There's been a radio station in the Mission off and on. They've had a lot of a hard time staying on the air because
there have been three San Francisco radio stations on and off with free radio, with radio. San Francisco Liberation Radio being the kind of the longest-lived and the most consistent one, and went off for a while after Free Radio Berkeley did, and now it's back on again. But I'm surprised that the micropower movement hasn't spread, you know, to each little city or Marin. You know, I'm wondering why or Oakland, as you point out. What do you think the reason for that is?
Well, there has been stations in Oakland, and there are something like, or there were anyway, something like 30 or 40 micro stations in California.
Right.
When we've had conferences, and again, I'm kind of distant from this right now, but every time there's been a conference, people have come out of the woodwork without even any advertising. I mean, a lot of people have come, whereas usually it's hard to get people to come to things. People really flock. There was a conference, I think, in Garberville or something like that, a few months ago, to which I didn't go and I didn't hear a lot about, but I understand there were people there. So it is happening, and there are, you know, there's stations in Fresno. There's a bunch in, of course, Watsonville near here.
Two in San Jose, maybe three
in L.A. I mean, there's like 30 stations or something.
One in Monterey, one in Big Sur.
There's also tons in Florida. They're all across the country. In Florida, there's a bunch. In Miami alone, there were a huge number, and some of them, a lot of them, are getting shut down actually. Or shutting themselves down, and some of it was very brutal. I don't know if you know about Doug Brewer in Florida. I mean, people should know about that, because that is a really astounding story. The kind of thing you never think is happens in the United States. This is what happens in other countries. That the police, and the CIA and the FCC, like 20 people went in to Doug Brewer's house, where he had this station called Party Pirate. It wasn't even some real political station. It was just like music, I think. And they held him at gunpoint on his floor.
The CIA, or are you talking about somebody else?
This is the whole group of 20, and they came in with unmarked, big, huge trucks where they had the serial numbers or whatever the numbers, some special numbers on the trucks, taped over. So obviously they knew they were doing something wrong. They took all his equipment, and because he's in the electronics business, he had like a lot of expensive equipment, like $1 million, some huge amount. I mean, much more than most free radio stations have. And they just took it, stole it, basically, to this day, because I talked to Doug, and it's been a year and a half, something like that. Taking the equipment doesn't have any rights in court or whatever. So it's never come to court. I don't think he's been charged with anything. I'm not positive about that, but he's never been to court. It definitely changed his politics, I'll tell you. I mean, he wasn't even political before this happened to him. But imagine that, 20 people, unmarked trucks.
Well, these radio broadcasters are pretty tough cookies. You got to have enough force to keep them in line, you know.
Yeah, well, I think it's very frightening, and people should really pay attention. And, of course, often most people don't know about these things because we can always come full circle back to the media again because the media is so controlled, and there's the last thing they're going to talk about is this.
Actually, our free radio Santa Cruz has a really media-active couple of guys, particularly Vinny, who was at a Philadelphia free radio station right before it was busted, and he's been here nearly from the beginning, and he always does incredibly detailed updates. Mm-hmm. For all of you listeners out there, you're, by the way, tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM, and I'm talking to Sue Supriano, a former therapist, a world traveler, broadcaster, mystic. What else are you, Sue, before we say goodbye, since we're running out of time?
I'm an elder woman.
She's an elder of the tribe. So listen and learn, all you young boys out there and young girls, and the older folks, too. Is there anything you want to conclude with, Sue?
Well, just so we got to keep on keeping on. And you, Robert, are certainly a great inspiration.
Well, thank you very much.
Nice. Well, Pablo and I are just taking the microphone over here for a minute to talk about
We've
Robert.
Stolen the mic.
Yes, we have. We've stolen the mic, and we like to... I'm Pablo, and I worked at Free Radio Berkeley. I give thanks to be here in these days of trials and tribulations, and I give thanks for Robert being able to be on the air and be here in Santa Cruz, and he's helping all these young people find their way through life and just doing what he can as a father for these children. And we all need love from our fathers and our mothers, and I just really like to say that I have a good warm feeling being in this house and seeing these kids come in and out of these doors. It's so wonderful. So keep on doing what you're doing, Robert. It's really good.
No, Pablo, you deluded lunatic, you.
Thank you.
Actually,
well,
this isn't my house. This is Becky's house, and Becky's really the mother who's taking care of all this situation. I'm just an interloper, an occasional passerby.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but you're both very wonderful. And I don't, you know, I just don't even know how to give you enough credit for all the incredible work you do. And I barely know anything about it because I live up in Berkeley and you're down in Santa Cruz, but every time I see you, hear about you, you're just...
And that's enough of that. That was Sue Supriano of Free Radio Santa Cruz giving an excellent recommendation for all you folks out there who think I'm... a bad boy, there is another opinion, so there. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and the fight for regaining autonomy and local control of KPFA resumes, actually continues. I've gotten three pages from my producer here on the update on the Pacifica crisis. It's pretty detailed, so I don't know how much of it is really of interest to general listeners out there. But I'm going to give you a brief summary. Those who are trying to regain control of KPFA, which has been firing its best programmers, those who've spoken out, censoring people, essentially kind of tying into the corporate media and the corporate grant system, they're asking you to contact selected national board members and point out that it's not a local conflict between KPFA and Pacifica up in Berkeley. That Pacifica, the umbrella oversight group, the group that controls all these stations, the association includes KPFA and four other national
so-called listener-sponsored radio stations, that their actions have cost Foundation over $500,000. Close to 1,000 people have written saying they'll no longer donate or withdrawing pledges, canceling wills and bequests, which will cause major financial problems for Pacifica because of Pacifica's activities in censoring its local stations. And the impression will get worse as the more national media cover the situation. A major PBS film, which was to broadcast on the 50th anniversary, is now being re-edited to include recent events, which have included the firing of Nicole Sawaya, for those of you who follow this situation. In a time of war and militarism, we have done no special programs about the Yugoslavia situation. Local Santa Cruz radio stations, please take note. Resource Center for Nonviolence, please take note. No live rally broadcasts, no special nationwide debate discussions, no live congressional hearings, broadcasts from Washington with phone-ins, nothing. As thousands rally from Omi Abu Jamal, we were unable to get a national live broadcast together. Similarly with other tragedies, including the killing of the gay man in Colorado, unable to provide that. So there's a lot of concern about what's going on radio station KPFA, and they're suggesting that you email and call a number of folks, Ken Ford, William Lucy, Frank Millspoff. And if anyone is interested in this, please give a call to the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-4833-HUFF. If you want to check this out on the Internet, go to Save Pacifica. That's one word, savepacifica@hotmail.com. You can get all these details. Finally, there is a protest tomorrow. Daily picketing begins in Berkeley Monday, April 26th. A listener group outraged at Pacifica's actions and unresponsive. On the Internet, and you can also give a call to 423-HUFF. That's off air, but you can catch somebody there, and they will give you some of these numbers and names. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
Well, they're putting up condos all over town. Acres of condos bringing me down. Tiny little condos, no parking, no pool. The condos are empty, the shelters are full. Oh, let's squat condos, it's cheaper than rent. Let's squat condos, that's where the housing went. Why they are homeless and the housing trust funds dry. They keep building condos that no one can buy. Well, Chevron and Mobil and Shell Oil did great, putting gas stations on prime real estate. Who'll buy land that's poison? Well, I'll tell you who. The rich to build condos to try to sell to you. Oh, let's squat condos, it's cheaper. Well, we really need shelters and SROs too. We really need child care and gardens to walk through. And places together so people can meet. But all we get are condos or living in the street. Oh, let's squat condos, it's cheaper than rent. Let's squat condos, that's where the housing went. That's why there are homeless and the housing trust funds dry. They keep building condos that no one can buy. Well, they say economics is what it's about. Building low-cost housing just doesn't pencil out. Well, I've got the answer. My research has shown if we squat the condos, the poor will have a home. Oh, let's squat the condos. It's cheaper. Keep building condos.
And that was Carol Denny from her album Failure to Disperse, Let's Squat the Condos. And apparently squatting or lying in bed is poor attorney Kate Wells. I've been under the weather this morning, but still with us. Hi, Kate.
Hi there. How you doing?
I'm better than you are,
better
apparently.
Than I am today. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I'm sorry you're not feeling well, but I know that you actually told us things that made me feel bad last time we talked on the phone, talking about the ongoing war against the poor and civil rights advocates out at the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center.
Well, yeah, and in a move that I call nothing less than a hate crime, Sergeant Hemingway has reached a new low. You have heard me in the past talk about the ongoing problems with Jerry Henry. Jerry, a few weeks back, had an incident where he was, he's been delivering food to the homeless, and he had an incident where he had a disabled man who was not able to reach his truck if it was parked in a regular parking space, so he pulled up in the along the red zone, which is commonly used along there as a loading zone anyway. We have, photographs of literally hundreds of vehicles and commercial trucks and that sort of thing parked there, and was trying to give this person food, and Hemingway came roaring out of the sheriff's substation there and told Jerry he had to move immediately, and that he was blocking traffic and causing all these hazards. So Jerry did, in fact, move. And but I think he probably, said something about, how dare you do something like this? I'm trying to feed a homeless person, whatever. And then, of course, I guess you have covered the issue of the holier-than-thou Hemingway having been...
Well, let me say this, Kate, before we go any further. We have covered in past shows that Jerry Henry got into trouble with the local merchants at the Aptos Shopping Center because he advised the younger people who hang out there of their right to hang out there.
Exactly.
And this kind of enraged the coffee roasting company and the other businesses, and they sought injunctions against him. And,
yep.
And he actually...
arrested him 6 times for trespassing in the public area there in front of the shops. All of the charges have been dropped. We've just found out that they are contemplating another one. At any rate...
What's this about Sergeant Hemingway being caught in flagrante delicto?
Yeah, well, it just turns out that Sergeant Hemingway just has a hard time keeping his pants up, evidently. Was stopped by, I'm not sure if it was Watsonville or Monterey police, at a porno theater in North Monterey County. The reports were published in the Sentinel. And Jerry Henry, fed up with Hemingway's tactic of calling in the parents of the kids that he counsels and telling them all kinds of, who knows what kind of terrible things.
So having failed in the courts, apparently the authorities are going to try to the parents to stop the kids from exercising their basic rights down there.
Exactly,
and
this
center.
Is even though, for instance, one of Jerry's incredible success stories is a youth by the name of Jeff Hickey, who is now 1 year clean and sober from having been a heroin addict, and credits Jerry with the entire success of where he is, although obviously he's had a big part of it too. But instead of pinning medals on Jerry, they're trying real hard to run him off
to
and
pin wraps on Jerry.
Yeah. So. At any rate, Jerry decided that if Hemingway was going to be spreading rumors about Jerry, that he would let the local population know what kind of a person they had heading up the substation as a role model for their kids, and passed out flyers that had the information taken straight from the Sentinel and different news articles about Mr. Hemingway with his pants down at the porno theater, which obviously has enraged middle-aged Hemingway. His new nickname down there has become Pee-wee.
Now.
So,
in other words, it's not really that we feel that. I think even a police officer should be allowed to get it off every so
often. Absolutely.
But I think the idea that the police officer then assumes a sanctimonious position.
Absolutely. It's just this hypocrisy. This absolute hypocrisy. I mean, here's Jerry doing nothing wrong but feeding homeless and helping kids to realize that they don't have to put up with this trail 'em and jail 'em attitude that the cops have. And he is absolutely crucified, whereas Hemingway is held out to be, you know, this great hero of it's insane. Well, at any rate, the latest blow, which I have characterized as no less than a hate crime, is that Jerry Henry, I guess it's about 2 weeks ago now, received a certified letter from the Department of Motor Vehicles stating that his driver's license had been summarily suspended. Summarily suspended, no hearing, due to mental disorder.
And has Mr. Henry got a history of any kind of psychiatric disorder?
No. He has never been institutionalized, never had any. He has what's called a psychological injury has an interesting background. He worked as quality control for Beach Nut Baby Foods, and when he brought it to their attention that there was a bunch of stuff in their food that shouldn't be in their food, they fired him, and he actually got damages for a psychological injury. But no, Jerry has no history of any kind of psychological problems.
Well,
and
you know, they say you have to be crazy to fight City Hall. Okay, maybe that's what they mean.
Right, I guess so. At any rate, we, of course, immediately suspected that Pee-wee had a part in it.
By Pee-wee, you mean Sergeant Hemingway.
Yes. And in fact, when we received all of the information from the DMV, it was absolutely true, and it was this incident that had to do with the homeless disabled man that had prompted this. Evidently, Jerry had yelled at Hemingway, or says that Jerry's been violent, which is absolutely untrue. I mean,
Jerry actually has taken to tape recording all these incidents.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, he's the most peaceful person I have ever met.
So
the best driver. He has absolutely never had an accident. Last ticket he got was 5 years ago. I've driven with him. He's the most cautious driver. I mean, he drives me crazy because he's so cautious. You know, and yet, based on Hemingway's representation that he was violent and erratic and all of these other things, they summarily suspended his license.
Well, you know, it's interesting that a police officer's word apparently is not simply law in court, but it's law prior to court.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you can get people locked up. Of course, the police officers have the power to do that.
Yeah, but it's an outrage. I mean, it is so clear what's happened here. You know, they know Jerry lives 8 miles out Fern Flat Road. Without a car, he's seriously disabled.
He cannot, in fact, come out and feed
the homeless, which is what's been a terrible byproduct.
Well, there are probably too many of them congregating in the Apto shopping center anyway without wallets.
Right, absolutely. Oh, we definitely want to, you know, clean up the parking lot. So then when we called the hearing, the first hearing date available was not until July.
Mm-hmm.
I called the Sacramento DMV and did a few talked to a few people, and they have now given us a hearing for tomorrow.
Wow. This, of course, is a closed hearing that the public can't participate in, right?
That's correct.
But you will hopefully make a tape this.
Well, we're gonna try and tape it. The DMV actually tapes it, and I'm sure their tape is available. But it's going to be a really interesting session. We're, of course, going to take these little flyers as evidence that this was a retaliatory move.
Well, I know this new sheriff's substation in the Apto Shopping Center and the response of some of the community to it. I know Richard Quigley responded when then Sergeant Deverell, who was, I guess, doing, you know, was the head of the substation, tried to paint his own parking
right.
space with his own paintbrush.
Uh-huh.
Quigley then parked there and said, you know, bite me.
Right.
And he got bitten by the police department and Deverell's friends in a massive campaign against him and his associates, which
Absolutely.
I guess is still going on, or has that been resolved?
Oh, no, no. It's still going on. And I think a lot of what happens to Jerry, in fact, it's really interesting. We received one of the police reports that refers to Jerry as Jerry Quigley.
Right. Up
so,
slip of the tongue there.
Yeah, so it's presumed that a lot of this hatred towards Jerry is still coming from the Quigley situation.
And Quigley himself, who is a civil rights advocate par excellence,
mm-hmm.
and has been doing so for years,
right.
advocating along the right of a person, for example, to use a motor vehicle without a license even? He's felt that's a...
That's correct.
And does he actually do that? I mean, is that his current stance?
Well, he currently does have a license, but only under protest, and he is at this point in the process of challenging the whole mandatory insurance scheme that the California legislature has cooked up to keep us, making sure that the California insurance companies
get their cut of the booty, man.
Yeah.
I know Richard was famous for fighting the helmet law.
Right.
And he also had the greatest T-shirts, for which he was barred from the flea market back in 1990. And I have one of them that says, quite appropriately now, given the bombing...
Fuck the war.
Fuck war.
Fuck war, right.
Yeah, great
right.
T-shirt, fuck war.
Yeah, he was banned from the flea market for those T-shirts.
Right. Certainly a subversive and obscene sentiment to say fuck war.
Yeah. There's also been some kind of new developments in the law that are probably something I should talk about, and I'll just go into it shortly because I'm going to have to stop pretty quick here.
Before you do, Kate, let me just ask you about Richard Quigley. He's under a new attack at the Apto Shopping Center, right?
Well, they brought an injunction against him, a restraining. They got it and ended up getting a restraining order, and in this. This was from Claudia Easterby, the manager of the Gottschalk store there in Aptos, who came up to Richard and told him to move along.
Was he in the store?
No, no, he was outside. He was outside talking to somebody.
Well, we know that Gottschalk owns the outside as well.
Right, and he told her to, you know, get the, you know what, away from him, mm-hmm. at which point she called and called the security, and they didn't end up doing anything, but as a result of this incident, they ended up getting a restraining order against him, believe it or not,
mm-hmm.
after she attacked him. What's happened is that the sheriff's substation has basically become this little private security force for the shopping center.
Mm-hmm.
And basically anything that the shopping center wants, they tell the sheriff's office there, and it's done.
Before you go into the law, the new law I think is significant, we should
mm-hmm.
know about, is there a number of people can call who want to offer support to either Richard Quigley or Jerry Henry or the youth of the Apto Shopping Center who are under attack?
Well, certainly they can always get there through me at 479-4475.
479-4475, and we're talking, of course, with attorney Kate Wells.
And Quigley has a number, and it is listed under Richard Quigley, Quigley.
And what's the latest update, Kate, around the this unfortunate, I guess, a rather depressing new development in law that I guess you were telling me? It's that that deputy sheriffs are not suable anymore or something?
Yeah, well, it's just another move in a way to insulate the government employees from being responsible for their own actions. There have been actually two developments that have come down. Sheriffs have been traditionally considered county or municipal employees for purposes of lawsuits for excessive force and different kinds of any kind of violation of civil rights.
And
in fact, they are county employees. They're
right.
paid by the county. They answer to the county. I mean, it's the sheriff is a county elected official.
Mm-hmm.
The first case to rule this was I can't recall right now what state, but it was not California. Was back east somewhere, and then the U.S. Supreme Court got involved, and now the Ninth Circuit has also followed suit in considering sheriffs, since they are enforcing, in fact, state law, are now to be considered state employees.
And the significance is, of course, that.
The significance is that a state is immune from any kind of damages based on the 11th Amendment. You cannot sue the state for damages.
I always thought the 11th Amendment was citizens of other states.
Yeah, no. It's been interpreted as far as saying that you cannot sue the state. And so they've just found another way of limiting cops' liabilities for their actions.
And their accountability. Particularly
Absolutely.
Important. I mean, the internal accountability of Sheriff Tracy's police department is just notoriously bad.
Oh, it's the worst. And I'm not just saying that as a person who regularly sues people, sues deputy sheriffs for what they've done. I'm talking about discussions I've had with many of my sheriff friends who are appalled at the fact that they are consistently watching lying cops, known to be lying, known to be violating people's rights on a regular basis, known to the sheriff, and they're watching them be promoted, and in fact, instead of being sanctioned in any way.
Well, I know in the Santa Cruz Police Department, Officer Lauren Baker, or Buddy Baker, as we called him, after being accused of 10 counts of harassing women and searches and so forth.
Immediately promoted.
He was promoted to sergeant within 2 or 3 years of that, and he also declared Officer of the Year.
Yep.
Similarly, Officer McPhillips has been declared Officer of the Year, I believe.
Similarly, Sergeant David Deverell in the Sheriff's Department in Aptos.
So one, the way the police have of dealing with this is not only to sort of, you know, protect their people at low profile and say, you know, put them into safer positions, but no, they are so arrogant, they say, let it all hang out, he's our favorite.
That's right.
You know, you attack the worst, well, let's make the worst our pinup boy.
That's
you know?
It.
I mean, it's
That's
just...
It. That's it.
It's frightening, is
it's
what it is.
It's sickening, and it's sickening to those deputy sheriffs, and as far as I'm concerned, the vast majority of them are honest and good good men. And they're absolutely sickened by what's going on as well.
You know, I have to ask you, Kate, before you go, I know that you may not have too much to tell us, but you made an impassioned speech to City Council about 2 months ago when the City Council, in essence, told the homeless to fuck off and you're going to have to get arrested for sleeping for the rest of the year because we've decided...
We can't get it together.
We cannot, you know, we cannot even find any place in Santa Cruz, high or low, in the many, many square miles that this town takes up, you know, of an acre where people can fall asleep in without being a threat of arrest.
Right.
And you said that at that point you would be forced now to take legal action. And we talked about this a couple of shows ago, and you said that, well, the problem with the ICORN decision, which was our most recent sort of positive light on the horizon, which said people charged with camping violations could use the necessity defense, claiming that the need to sleep is, you know, as a more health essential thing than it's a greater evil not to be able to sleep than to enforce a law for sleeping.
The crime that you're committing by sleeping.
Right. That this could be used, but it wouldn't be helpful because our local laws are infractions and not misdemeanors on this issue.
Right.
You then suggested, I guess, we would have to take cases to federal court and try to use the same kind of reasoning that was eventually successful in Miami in the Pottinger decision.
Right. I was just going to say I think that our by far our better tactic would be to go to the federal court with Pottinger in hand and go straight to I don't see any advancement in our local courts especially when they have a chance to hire or appoint a new a new judge, and we get Danner,
Well, it has to be said. I haven't seen any cases go before Danner, but I understand Mark Bourne, who was recently troll-busted about a month ago, kicked in about the ribs, broken ribs, bleeding head, stitches, broken finger. He is now, of course, being harassed by police for bicycle tickets and a whole series of minor infractions.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going before, I guess, attorney Tony Bowl is taking up his case.
Okay.
And one of them is going to be before Judge, it's hard for me to say it, Judge Art dinner. Boy, the words don't even come out.
Well, I actually had a case in front of him already with Preacher Mike, and he dismissed the charges.
Oh, well, maybe Danner is keeping a low profile to begin with.
Well, he was charged with, a disabled man that drove his truck out onto a vacant field somewhere. He then tried to help him tow the truck out, and his truck got stopped. Of course, you know, Preacher Mike has only one leg, so, you know, we're talking about disabled, helping disabled here. And they came along and cited him for destroying property. It's this big weed. I mean,
he was stepping on weeds with
weeds,
his one leg.
Weeds, yeah. Yeah, I told Judge Danner that we'd be happy to go and re-weed the property.
Weedy.
We-weed the property. Yeah.
I see. So
there's one other thing that's of significance in terms of immunity and the direction the courts continue to go. We still are suffering from the Reagan and Bush appointees to the court. But the latest blow is that it used to be that a sheriff or a law enforcement officer was immune from damages if a reasonable officer in his shoes would have done the same thing he did. That's the standard for it.
Mm-hmm.
The latest court case to come down on this has said now that he is immune if a reasonable officer in his shoes might.
Well, let's give him a little more leeway,
that.
Man.
Well, yeah.
We don't want to tie our sheriff's hands.
I have one
toes.
More thing to say that I'm just infuriated about, and it's hard for me to believe that I haven't heard any news media talk about this. That is that I cannot believe that our President Clinton was not struck down by lightning in his little speech after the Littleton killings when he got up there and had the nerve to say that we have to teach our children to use words to resolve conflict instead of... I mean, I am absolutely infuriated. They were following the example of the highest level in this country of political office. They were just how many children died in that 5-minute speech in Kosovo? How many innocent children died? And I mean, you know, it's the hypocrisy is absolutely insane.
Monumental and of course typical. When nations are at war, the murder rate domestically rises
significantly.
Violence
begets violence, and
violence
you can't
is
tell
the,
me that it's
is the way to solve problems.
Condone violence, and I want to also use this time to absolutely condemn the proposed execution that's coming up here in California. I just again I can't fathom how we can't figure out that to condone cold-blooded murder in any way creates an ambiguity in people's minds that in certain cases it's our right to kill people. And
anything new on the cannabis scene, Kate? You were
we're trying real hard to find
clubs.
A new place to open. We haven't been able to find anybody who's willing to rent to us, so anybody out there who might have some location that would be centrally located where people could get to it that would be willing to rent to us, we'll pay full price for rent. We're looking for a place.
I also know that Needle Exchange was under attack in the last year, though I think those attacks have leveled off. Though last night, some of the main people behind that attack, I guess a couple who lost their son through a heroin overdose, or the father was down there at the town clock.
McClellan.
Believe so, with signs, and I think I know one person who wanted to go down with a sign and say support Needle Exchange, because these are the people who apparently encouraged Sergeant McMahon, our local SCP person, to demand that literature be censored. Fuck clean, fuck safe, shoot clean, I guess was the literature they were putting out, very vernacular street language, to stop the AIDS virus from.
Exactly.
Generating through dirty needles. And, you know, it's amazing how wrong-headed people can be under this kind of crisis.
Yeah.
I really appreciate your, from your sick bed, giving us this lengthy update.
Well,
I think it's important.
Wish me luck tomorrow on Jerry Henry's hearing.
I will be calling you tomorrow to get the update. Hopefully you can bootleg a tape so we can hear these
That'd be great.
These clowns in their den.
We have, by the way, subpoenaed Sergeant Hemingway to be there at the hearing.
Did you subpoena the Pee Wee tapes?
Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And by the way, my guests joined me in telling you to keep up the good work.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The war was done and time was on our side, and no one spoke of how many died in Japan, and no one knew just what that blast began. Such power fell into a few men's hands. It seemed they had the world at their command for a while. When asked about the dangers, they would smile and say, "It's too deep to meter, too cheap to meter, too cheap to meter, like the sun, like the sun." While testing over ground out in the west, the test from nearby, and radiation marked those men to die. The weapons contract signed, the treaties made, plutonium produced at weapons grade up for sale. No one spoke of the outcome should they fail. The risks are too small to meter, too small to meter, too small to meter.
Hassan is one of our guests, and you've been listening to Chris and Lem's Too Cheap to Meter from an early album of hers from the 80s. A really fine singer who actually sings about relevant topics. Kind of hard to mix the two. An incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. This is Laura with the announcements for the Kosovo offense.
Tell me about it.
Okay. On Mondays at 5:30 p.m., the Women's International League for Peace of Freedom has been holding candlelight visuals at the clock tower. That's every Monday at 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
For students on campus this week, the Santa Cruz Coalition to Stop the Bombing in Serbia will be tabling and providing informational pamphlets distributing different perspectives on the issues in Yugoslavia. That's all week, and also at 7:30 on Thursday night, there will be a candlelight visual at the flagpole at the Baytree Bookstore. It's for concerned students and people who have concern over the issue.
And when is that vigil?
That's 7:30 on Thursday.
And the tabling is what time?
The tabling will be all this week. It should be just in various places all over campus, just to get information to students. I think we're very confused about the issue at this point. They're also going to be holding meetings at 4 p.m. on Thursdays at the Student Center.
That's
for concerned students.
Coalition to Stop the Bombing in Serbia?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, their phone number also is 423-1448 if they have questions on issues.
That's the Coalition to Stop the Bombing in Serbia, 423-1448.
Right.
And Laura, how long have you been involved with this issue yourself?
I'm actually kind of an outsider to the issue in some senses. I'm involved with Rascals on campus. Rascals is the Radical Action Student Coalition Against Lies and Suppression. We've been a group that's formed up for the last few years that spreads information to students in the community.
Mm-hmm. And how can Rascals be reached?
You can call my number. That number is 425-8573.
425-8573. What kind of projects have you got planned around issues that might be important to folks concerned about both the bombing in Serbia and also civil rights issues here in Santa Cruz?
At this point, well, there are various people in the organization who work on different issues. There are some on the homeless bans and things of that nature. At this point, on May 12th, that's a Wednesday at 8 p.m., we do have Norman Solomon come to speak at Kresge Town Hall. And he'll be speaking on the war in Yugoslavia and habits of highly deceptive media, which is his new book that's recently come out.
Wow. Quite a number of things happening. Plus, I understand that even the old pokey head-in-the-sand Resource Center for Nonviolence may actually be trying to get some kind of a forum together. We even heard city council members at the last Tuesday city council meeting talking about maybe organizing a forum at the Loudon Nelson Center and so forth. So.
That's right.
But the next event happening, I guess, is the Monday picketing by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom at the Town Clock?
That's right. Yeah, I won't comment on any of your comments for the Resource Center for Nonviolence. However, I do know that they are making the meeting at 7 to 9 on Tuesday at the Loudon and Nelson Center. That's the Yugoslavia Crisis Forum Committee that's recently formed, getting several organizations together.
That's
I believe they're asking for as many organizations to come there to represent their groups as possible, just to gain solidarity on the issue at this point.
7 to 9, April 27th, Tuesday.
Yes,
at
exactly.
The Loudon Nelson Center. That's the Resource Center for Nonviolence moving into action at last, we hope. That's from my perspective, not, I'm sure, not necessarily yours. So anyway, what time again is the picketing tomorrow at the town clock?
As far on Monday, 5:30, I don't know if it's actually picketing. I know it's a candlelight visual. Unfortunately, that's all the information I know on that for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.
Mm-hmm. That's also, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom is in the book, for those of you who want to look it up. If anyone has any questions about any of these times or numbers, you can always call 423-HUF, 423-4833, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. The civil rights group I work with, there actually are people at that line now available to answer any calls that you have. Anything else you want to add, Laura?
Not that I have right now.
Hey.
Thank you very much, Bill.
I thank you for calling in and being patient enough to wait through all our different guests.
No, thank you. It's a pleasure to announce them.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye, Robert.
Bye-bye.
And lots of stuff coming up for those of you who want to get active around stopping NATO's crazy escalation of a conflict that was already bad enough in Yugoslavia. In the studio with us today, we have, I hope I make these pronunciations properly, Abdul Hassan. And Abdul, here, how's your mic? Let's see how we do.
All right, here you go.
Oh, good, okay.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Robert. It's
all
a pleasure to be on your show today.
Let's get the levels right. And also in the studio with us, we have James Nye, that irascible, irrepressible, I don't know, father, sometime homeless. You were the actual supervisor for the armory for several months, or for a month or so, until you were canned by Karen Gillette. Is that right?
That's true. Very true, Robert, and it's a pleasure to be here and see you again.
And I hope we can get the update on what's happening at that wild and crazy homeless services center where Queen Karen apparently is retiring with honors as a reigning matriarch. We've got kind of two guests here. Let me give an introduction to both of them. James is James is a man who hasn't been around as long as Abdul, at least in the Santa Cruz community. You're relatively recent, the last couple of years, James.
Yes, I've worked in other communities. This is the first time I've come to a community, though, that is just as nasty as this community is to people. I mean, this is supposed to be a community of people that came here for love, freedom, the beach, the sun, the trees, and yet they can treat their fellow man the way they treat them in this town?
Well, we hope we can get some details from that on you. And Abdul, you're a man. I ran into you back in 1988 when you were concerned with a number of us in ending the sleeping ban.
That's correct.
And the blanket ban, or actually we were attacking the broader camping ordinance, but we meant those sections of the ordinance that had to do with making it criminal for people to sleep, and you...
I was arrested.
You were arrested, as was... Yeah, we were all getting... They were busting us right and left
in
those days. And I know that...
Still getting harassed today by all that, but it ain't about me today.
Well, we can talk about that, too.
Yeah, I'm here as I always have been, as one of the black voices in the community.
You are, in fact, an African-American of...
Yes, I am.
Respectful vintage, I might add. And you also are a former city council candidate. You ran for city council in 1988, and along with, I guess, another radical...
92.
And you again ran in 92.
Yeah, and I garnished out quite a few votes, a few thousand, matter of fact.
You know, I didn't remember that 92 race. I guess Linda LeMaster was also running.
Yes,
you were, you guys,
yes.
Perhaps.
We was on that same environmentalist coalition.
Civil rights ticket.
Yeah, we had the, they called us the ultra environmentalists.
I see. So
me and Eagle and Clark. It was,
well, you know, there's been a lot of talk. There's been a lot of talk about hate crimes in the community. Mm. I know we had this scene over at Neary Lagoon where there seemed to be attacks on African American people.
I've been
in
attacked
a vehicle
before.
What's it like in the last couple of years, Abdul? Around being
well, I haven't
African-
been here in a couple of years. I can't speak on that. I've been back on my farm in Kansas.
When did you get back into town? I'm sorry.
Oh, just about 4 months now. I just got.
Well,
back.
Last 4 months. What do you notice in Santa Cruz?
It's a great change, I tell you.
Tell me about it. How has the town changed?
I would be speculating on. I know it's elective. I guess that it's elective in the law enforcement. That's for sure. I see a lot of. Selective law enforcement.
For example,
right there.
Give me an instance.
It's like me. I was pulled over, I'm sure, because I was a person of color, you know.
Well, you told me that
totally
back in 1992 you got some minor violation for sleeping
some stuff like that.
And they claimed that you failed to do the last day of your community service.
That's right.
So 8 years later or 7 years later, when you returned to town 4 months ago, they arrested you and then held you for 4 days.
And I also recalled all the warrants or whatever they thought they had to pay off prior to this, and I got a DMV printout saying that all of my record was clear, and all that stuff is supposed to have ended in last year or something like that.
It seems like an awfully long time ago.
I think it was a computer error.
Yeah.
And that's putting it mildly.
A computer error.
I had to do 4 days. I had to pass into jail and everything for 4 days.
Got out, you felt frightened to challenge it because you're afraid they'd throw you back in the slammer.
Yeah, it was courage. They encouraged me in a way. You know, I was in there on a no bail warrant. They had jacked it all up on me, and I couldn't get out. I couldn't pay the $200, and don't go to jail. And when I went to court that 5 day, 4 days later, the judge gave me an offer that I couldn't refuse.
Cop a plea and we'll let you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you on probation? Probably not.
No, it's such a minor offense.
So
it's just all traffic. It's all been infraction, but I can't believe how it has they have exacerbated this matter.
Well, as a man of color in the community, you can only speak, I guess, from your previous time. You were away for how many years?
Just a couple. I left in 97.
So is there systematic discrimination against African Americans, from the police force or from the rest of the community?
My personal experience in this community, it's been up until a few years ago, it was totally directed at me. I mean, you know, they would stop me all the time.
Give me an example of how you were stopped. For what?
Well, you know, I got tickets for making too wide of a left turn and failing to stop at a stop
driving
sign.
Driving while black.
Yeah.
I see. Well, you should know better than drive while black.
That, you know, I'm telling you, I was sleeping under Lyle Nelson Center by 5:30 in the morning in my car. You know, and they told me that I was camping
in Santa Cruz,
and I had to go to. I felt, you know, I felt like during that time I was running for city council, so I didn't have to. I just said I ain't gonna pay this ticket. You know, we were all protesting, paying tickets anyway. So I was a true advocate for the homeless.
We're talking.
Yeah. No, this is '92, I think it was. So that's all I ever been in. It's they didn't build this ticket thing into a real.
Well, don't we have groups like the NAACP who are vigorously fighting for the rights of people of color?
Well, I think so. I'm not going to be. I'm not here to bash NAACP. I have my run-ins with them. I'm one of the skeleton committee members of that group, and you know, I go back with them. So, more power for the NAACP.
I see. Well, I'm glad that. I mean, so you feel that they are an effective organization for acting for the rights of poor black people in this community?
Yes, I do. That's correct, sir.
Okay. We'll have to grill you on that one later, because I heard plenty of contrary statements about that. Let me. Why don't you pass the mic over to James, and James, give me your voice level so we know what level
okay.
you're talking at.
How about that?
That's good.
Okay.
And James, we know that you became interested. We've interviewed you several times on Free Radio about your work as a supervisor of the armory when that was going on, and then your concerns about corruption in the homeless services center, food distribution and
correct.
Clothing distribution,
correct.
And how you feel that that resulted in your firing, although I guess claims from the homeless services center were that you were fired for some sexual misconduct or something of that sort.
Well, yeah, actually they made something up. It wasn't that they claimed I sexual misconduct. They claimed there was a sexual harassment at the armory. And that I inappropriately dealt with the first alarm security guard that worked there. The real problems with that was that the sexual harassment issue they're speaking of, one lady claimed that a gentleman was making sexual comments about her, prior to this they both claimed to be friends, was dealt with by a gentleman named Sean, and who was an armory employee, because they have a manager and then they have...
Well, rather than
going
into the details, was there merit to your the claim that you improperly dealt with the first alarm security officer?
Absolutely
not.
The point I'm making there is that the person who dealt with the first alarm gentleman was named Sean.
So it wasn't you who did the dealing?
No.
So it was a case of mistaken identity.
And then it was two